Hi, everybody. This is a new episode of Literatuna. And as you might be able to tell, it's again an English episode. And that's why I have Jamie here.
Hello.
Co-moderation. And we have a guest from the USA, Kelsey Ayu, who writes science fiction and horror and young adult. And what have I forgotten?
Thriller, fantasy.
Oh, okay. Yes, I think the novel was much more thriller than sci-fi. Yeah. And I think the first short story I've read was Scarcity of Sharks, which is already translated to German in the last Future Fiction magazine. And you can buy it and read it if you haven't already. There's a shark in it, or, well, it's not really a shark, but we will come to this later, whose name? Wolves. And maybe you can introduce yourself a little bit more deeply.
Yeah, sure. Thank you so much for inviting me on the podcast. As you said, I'm Kelsey Ayu. I am an author who writes across many different lengths and genres. I write short stories, actually essays too, novellas, novels, and then, you know, you'd mentioned the genres already. So I do hop around quite a bit, although I think probably my home base is horror at the moment. But, you know, we'll see how that goes as my writing continues. I live in Portland, Oregon in the U.S., and I have two young kids and a stepkid. So, you know, I spend much of my day running around taking care of them. And then in the evenings, that's often my writing time. So, happy to be here.
They actually do get to bed eventually.
Well, actually, my husband watches them in the evenings after dinner so that I can't write.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. My kids never sleep, so that's why I ask.
Yeah, my kids are, they don't like to go to bed early, so someone's going to watch them.
I can relate. And you have said that you are a lot into sharks. You just love
sharks. Yes.
When I told Jenny, oh, there's an author I want in our podcast, and she likes sharks, and then I was continuing to talk, and Jamie was, you had me with the sharks already.
Yes, I love sharks. You wouldn't believe how many shark nonfiction books I have on my shelf. It's a kind of a horrifying amount. There's actually quite a lot of it out there, which is very cool.
Did you only have it, or did you also read them?
I've read some of them, but not all of them yet. They are numerous. But actually, I don't know if you want to talk about the story yet or if I'm getting ahead of myself. I actually originally had a plan to write a novel that, you know, has sharks as a central aspect. And because of that, I ended up doing tons and tons of research, sharks, oceanography, like lots of related subjects. You know, I read a memoir by a cave diver. Like it was really, really fascinating. And then I wrote about half the book and then realized that the book was a little too complicated. I didn't want to finish it at that time. I might come back to it in a future date. But then I had all this shark knowledge just floating around in my head because I'd read so, so much about them. And that's where A Scarcity of Sharks came from because, you know, when you have all this information and you're just so excited to write something about it, sometimes it just comes out in the form of a short story. So that's actually where that story originated.
And did you call the shark? It's not the shark, but it's
sort of a shark.
It's a made-up shark. It's where the protagonist is in something who looks like a shark, and that's named Boos. And we have this this moment with the Future Fiction magazine where Uwe had translated the story into German. And it's very difficult to say Boos's face in German.
Oh, no.
Strange, you know, the Boos's part, you know? It's very complicated to translate that. And we had to Google it and everything and ask the professional translator. And he was like, why is this shark called Bruce? And I was like, don't you know Finding Nemo? The shark has to be called Bruce. You can't just ask her to change it. It's Bruce, you know, it's a shark.
Yes, that is really funny. So a little bit of backstory again on the publication process for A Scarcity of Sharks. The explanation for Bruce's name was actually originally in the very first scene, but when I published it with Reckoning Magazine, they asked if I would cut the first scene, and so that part was taken out.
Oh, I see.
Getting more mysterious.
Yeah, I mean, I could tell you secretly what I guess now.
I wouldn't let Uwe change the name, and he would have asked anyway. So, and then you could have told him. So, yeah, it's nothing we can just do.
Yeah. So actually, I mean, I do. You know, of course, Finding Nemo is in part where it came from for me, but actually, it's also a reference to the shark from Jaws. Which, funny enough, I've never actually watched. Maybe I shouldn't admit that, but I know that, you know, later on in life, the creator of Jaws regretted kind of what he had accidentally set in motion in terms of like people fearing sharks and going after them. And so it was sort of supposed to be like they're kind of naming him as a kind of redemption of sorts. So anyway, that was the origin for Bruce's name.
Yeah. So that was my first contact to your pose. And afterwards, I bought Bound Feet. And then I was like, okay, that's a horror story. And I really like good horror. And it's like, I don't know if this such a genre actually exists, like female horror, that I personally, as a woman, can relate to, especially because I'm a woman. I think maybe for men, it's not the same because they miscarriages, I think, are really bad for men as well, but it's a different kind of bad. Maybe kind of not being able to do anything because it's not their body, but for women, it's different. And I think it's better in the US, but in Germany, it's very taboo to talk about it. And when something like this happens, and it happens to a lot of women, and it has happened to me as well, twice. And so you can't even talk about it because people act like they don't want anything to do with this topic when childs are harmed and even in usual. And that's why I was really, the grieving in Bound Feet was so, I really could feel it, and I really liked that. And the twist, we won't spoil it. I didn't see that coming. Absolutely not.
So perhaps I will just glitch in and ask a question in that. How are you, what are you doing that one can feel so close to your protagonists? Because that's what Yvonne talks about, a horror story. Perhaps that's for the background for the listeners or the audience. So is there a kind of way how you design them, or how you consciously put the story that your readers can really fast attach to them and feel for them and care for them?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say now I'm a little bit more deliberate about it. But Bound Feet was very, very early for me in writing horror. I had maybe written like one or two horror short stories before that. But, you know, Bound Feet did come at a time when I was grieving over a miscarriage. And it's probably the, out of all of the books I've written, novellas and novels, it is the one that was the most intuitive for me. I really just, you know, I mean, I came up with the premise and I, you know, plotted it out and everything, but the writing of it was so emotional. I just started and I just wrote and wrote, and I feel like all these feelings kind of poured out onto the page. So I'm not sure that I can say it was especially deliberate in Bound Feet. I think the, maybe the deliberate part of it was allowing myself to be vulnerable, kind of pushing myself to open up and, you know, let all of those feelings out. Because I feel before that, I was always a little bit more cautious about what I chose to put in my stories, how personal I got, and just realizing that writing horror was a way to experience a sort of catharsis and share something that, you know, other people might relate to as well was really a big turning point for me in how I kind of decided to move forward and what I write now and how I write things. And since then, I've written another horror, well, a horror novel, I guess I should say, since that one was a novella. And I think I was a little bit more deliberate about pushing myself in that sense, because in this more recent horror novel, the things that my character is experiencing that I relate to, you know, in some parts, not all of it, of course, but the parts that I relate to that are her vulnerabilities come from a place in my past, not so much in my present. You know, she's in her 20s, and it's like I went back and really forced myself to dig deep into how I felt at the time, how I felt in certain relationships, and push myself to put some of those feelings on the page. So yeah, so I feel Bound Feet really helped me move toward a place of writing more, like writing very authentic emotions and just like making sure that I'm trying to push myself to be a little bit vulnerable.
That kind of safety net to not use present emotions but past emotions, so that you can be close to your emotions, but it's not pushing you away right now when you write it. It sounds for me that you're really into it and it's really putting stuff up. So you have to be careful with yourself not to go to places where it's too near at the present.
I think actually in this case, it just happened to be that was what the story needed. That I needed more of my past self because the character is much more like my past self than like my present self, rather than a deliberate kind of distancing. But the funny thing is, in a way, the opposite happened. Like, instead of feeling like, oh, it's distance because I'm not so much that person anymore, it kind of brought all these feelings back and it made me sort of deal with a lot of emotions from the past that I wasn't really expecting to deal with. So that was something that came as a surprise to me.
It's interesting that you say you are able to think about the past and relive those emotions when you write. I've written some cool stuff when I was in my 20s. And when I look at it now, I want to finish this stuff, but I'm not sure if I can be that kind of woman again, at least while writing, but I haven't tried it out yet.
Yeah, I think for me, something that helps is just consuming media as well that puts me back in that place. For example, you know, going through difficult breakups in my past, like listening to breakup music and those kinds of things, or, you know, just trying to like emotionally remind myself of what these things feel like and really immerse myself that way helped a lot. And that's cool that you wrote, and I hope that you do return to your stories sometime.
Yeah, that would be cool because they are very funny as well. Maybe bitter for me. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that novel, especially if it's horror. Will it come out next year?
Definitely not next year. I can't really talk about what's going on with that book, but I am pretty hopeful that it will be published, and I hope to be able to share more about it at a future time.
Your last novel is like a week ago, so.
Yes, that is true. Just came out. It's Only a Game, my young adult thriller.
And it's a week ago, and how does it feel? How do you feel now? How's the feedback?
Oh, it's exciting. I mean, I had a book launch at a bookstore, which was the first in-person event I've done. So that was quite a lot of fun, you know, and it's been very surreal signing books and just reading people's very kind words they've had to say about the book so far. I don't go and seek out reviews, but if people tag me in them, then I will look. So people have, you know, been very nice posting about my book, and friends texting me that they're reading it. So it's been a whirlwind. It's been very busy, but also a great time.
And they are fast then, because it's like, what, exactly a week? 6 days?
Let's see. Last Tuesday? It's like Thursday. Yeah, just over a week. But some of them were texting me that night saying that, you know, they started it, and some people finished it by the next day. So, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Okay, it's possible if you don't have kids, I guess.
Yes, definitely helps. And, you know, many of my friends I met through the reading community, so some of them are very, very fast readers.
And when did you write it? Like last year or?
Oh, no. Oh, the process of writing It's Only a Game was very, very long. I actually started writing it, I believe, 7 years ago. Yes. So it was the first novel that I queried agents with. And, you know, it's also the book that I really learned to write with. The first version of the book was terrible. It will never see the light of day, and it needed rewriting. Actually, the first version was an adult thriller, and then I changed it to a young adult thriller once I realized that the premise of the story really fit young adult much better. It was much more tense and suspenseful that way. And so then the second version of the book was a young adult thriller, and, you know, I sent it to beta readers. I got feedback. I revised it. And then I queried agents, had a lot of interest in the premise, but, you know, there were some issues with the story itself. And, you know, I got feedback from some agents, and based on that, I ended up rewriting the book entirely. And then I sent that version around, and that's the one that I signed my agent with. And then, of course, we went through revisions as well, and then we submitted it to publishers, and then I went through even more revisions. So this book has been through many, 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 many iterations. It took a long time, but the nice thing about the fact that I had a chance to revisit it more recently is I really got to edit it into being more of a kind of story that I would write now rather than something I would have written, you know, back very, very early on. And I'm really happy with how it turned out. But it has been quite the journey to get here, and I hope that none of my other books take that long.
That's not what really comes to mind is when I read about American authors or talk to American authors, I always feel that writing is also work and lots of learning mm-hmm. and rewriting and revisiting. I am under the impression that in the USA, everybody knows it's work and you have to learn it. And it's not really like this here in Germany. I don't know why. Maybe it's Goethe's fault or so, that people think...
Just punish Goethe for it. That's it's a good one.
People think either you're a genius, you can do it, and you don't have to do anything with the first version. You can just hand it in. Or you can't do it. And there's nothing in between. Okay, of course, I'm exaggerating now, but a little bit like this. So is it like in the USA, you learn it in school already, or have you been to writing classes during school already?
I do know many writers have gone through writing programs. You know, a lot of them have English degrees. Some of them may have MFAs, Masters in Fine Arts. I did, you know, take the basic English classes, and I took some creative writing classes here and there, but I actually majored in accounting. So very, very far from writing. I was an accountant for quite a few years before switching to writing, but that's kind of just a little quirk for myself. I've always been somebody who has both like a side that's interested in math and business and a side that's interested in creativity, writing. You know, I would say I did a lot of crafts before having kids, and hopefully we'll do crafts again someday. writing ended up being kind of the perfect balance for me, where I do, you know, like you describe, approach it in a somewhat business-like sense, just because I'm trying to like write and publish novels and, you know, dealing with large publishers and everything. You, in some ways, almost have to think about it that way. But it also has that creative side for me. So it's ended up being a very good balance. I wouldn't say everybody here sees it that way, but I do think a lot of the people that end up publishing novels with traditional publishers, as in like the very large, like the Big Five or other very large publishers, often kind of take on that view or have that sort of view, because you are working with a corporation and, you know, to publish the book. And so I think it at least doesn't hurt to think about it in a business way in that sense, because otherwise I think it can be very hard to handle. Whereas I would say It's Only a Game, just for context for listeners, it was published with Bloomsbury, so they're, you know, a rather large publisher, whereas Bound Feet, my novella, was published with Cemetery Gates Media, which is a micro press. So it's run by like mostly one person now, you know, less than a handful of people doing the work. And so I think that publishing in those with like micro presses or, you know, very small outfits like that are, it's a different experience. And it's much more like, you know, just everyone's kind of trying to publish books because they love books. It's rarely that they're making much money off of it. Sometimes they're losing money off publishing books, but it's more like for the love of it and for the craft. And I think they're both like great experiences. It's just depends what you want out of it. But for example, with Bound Feet, it went from acceptance of the story to publication in, let's see, 5 months, 6 months, less than 6 months. Whereas with It's Only a Game, you know, even after I'd had my agent and we'd gone on submission, once the publisher accepted it, it took like almost like a year and maybe 8 or 9 months to come out. Just, you know, it's a corporation, so it just, it goes through many, many rounds of edits as well. It just goes through a whole like much more in-depth process. So I've rambled a bit, but that's, it's interesting to me. Yeah, so I think it also depends on kind of what spaces you're talking to people in, especially, you know, with short stories, short fiction, and like indie press spaces. I'm kind of in both spaces, so I say it that way. When I talk to people there, there's a lot more people who are doing it for the love of it, especially with short stories. Some people do it as a hobby, and, you know, they just send it out because why not? It's kind of fun, but they're not necessarily trying to make a career out of it. But when I'm talking to authors in the traditional publishing space, again, you know, not everybody is, but a lot more of them are looking to move toward a career or at least, you know, a partial career doing so. So I think there can just be a difference depending on who you're talking to and what spaces they inhabit.
Yeah, I think there are some similarities to our publishing, at least with novels, but I don't think that we in Germany have, you can't make money with short stories. I think there are only two magazines. There will be a third one who pays. And as you have published with Future Fiction Magazine, I think that's already the magazine who pays the most. So, you know, there's no money in there because it's just difficult enough to not have to pay to do a magazine.
That's
different in the US, isn't it?
Yes and no. I don't think people can really make careers off short fiction anymore. I think once upon a time that was possible for a few writers, but nowadays I think that it would be nearly impossible. Even though, like you said, there are many more magazines that do pay, and some of them pay a decent amount, but just, you know, I don't think it's, I don't think there's enough magazines. I don't think they're paying quite enough to cover cost of living in most places here. So I think it would still be difficult. And that is sometimes why you also see short story writers who start to move toward novels, just because, trust, there's still a lot of novelists who are also not making, you know, a living wage off of novels, but at least there is the possibility there. And so I think that happens quite frequently and you start to see those authors moving toward the novel space.
May I take a step into another direction, or just want to ask something, an additional question you want about publishing?
Maybe about short stories. I don't know which direction you want to take.
I would just like to go for experience in different genres.
Go ahead.
All right. Okay. Then you can just glitch into my question. You just told us, okay, you're writing in different genres. So in your experience, what does each genre needs you to do to get it work? Because I think horror has different mechanism how you get me as your audience than science fiction or a thriller. So what can you just picture the main differences, or do you have different ways to deal this, or how you reveal your stories in that?
Yeah, so here's where I admit that I pretty much only know how to write one kind of book. In terms of, you know, for novels or novellas, which is a mystery. Every single one of my books is structured around a mystery. And, you know, I've written horror and thrillers for my books. And I find that I'm sure I could probably figure out how to write another kind of story at some point. But, you know, at that length, I find it very helpful for, like, keeping myself and hopefully the reader interested as we go, you know, unveiling clues and having some sort of structure so that it moves in a way that makes sense and that I'm satisfied with. I also just obviously really love mysteries. So that's part of it. And so I think that's part of why I've only done fantasy and science fiction in the short fiction space so far. Because some of those are also mysteries, but also, you know, I feel like there are other ways to approach short stories, and I wish I could articulate it, but I think I'm still figuring out for myself exactly how I come up with the stories and the story structures for short stories. I feel like those are just much more intuitive to me rather than, like, with my novels and novellas, I do plan them out quite heavily. I do a lot of outlining, like a lot of outlining before I begin. You know, they're much more rigid and structured in terms of my process for writing them. Whereas with short fiction, sometimes I have a very short bullet point outline or something just so I don't forget to write a certain scene that I've envisioned. But a lot of times I just start writing and just see what happens. And so, so I guess at the moment, fantasy and science fiction is a little more just intuitively done for me. And I think maybe once I figure out how to actually structure a longer form piece for that, I'll tackle a novel in that space.
But you also have the impression that you have to go in a different way if you write a fantasy short story than a horror short story.
Yeah.
Because I thought so as I read your short stories that they have different directions, and that you were one of the first horror stories I read, so that was really interesting for me from experience to see, okay, I read a lot of science fiction short stories now, and now I see, okay, these stories work. I don't know if I can say completely different, but they work different in a different way, and they catch me in a different way, and they put me to some edges of the room where science fiction don't go. Perhaps I can say it in that way. So I was just interesting, and I don't have the word for it right now, but I think it's interesting just to go around that fork and get an idea to get some hints or some.
Yeah, I think with my horror, I'm often exploring some sort of emotion or dealing with a difficult situation. Usually, like, a lot of my characters are grieving or processing some sort of trauma. And so the story of the horror story is usually focused around whatever that central event is for them that they are trying to figure out how to deal with. And so I think that typically tends to shape, like, the direction the story goes. You know, sometimes I don't always go for an ending that is, like, scary. Sometimes I have a hopeful ending, but I think it sort of depends what I want for the character. Like, if it's a character who's trying to process grief or trauma and I want them to feel some measure of hope at the end, I will move my story in that direction. Whereas sometimes the story, for example, I have a story, China Doll, published in the Aseptic and Faintly Sadistic anthology. And, you know, without spoiling too much, it's less of a hopeful ending, I'll just say, because that story, I guess, in my mind is a little bit less about the character processing something and a little bit more about a larger systemic issue. And so I think it just often depends on what I'm trying to highlight with the piece, whether it's more about the character or whether it's more about a theme that they sort of are just like one little cog in a larger machine for. And then with the science fiction, like, oh, I'm trying to think about how I write those. I don't even know, which is terrible.
That's fine. I think it's interesting that you're so conscious how you write horror, to say, okay, I got this systemic approach, or I got this emotional approach. What do I want from my mm-hmm. character? So that sounds for me, okay, you really know where it goes, and then you just figure out what kind of symbols you put in there that it's working.
Yeah, I do typically know the ending for everything. Even if I say, you know, I sit down to write a story and I just write, I usually need to know what it's moving toward in order to come up with the story, because I think otherwise it would just wander all over the place.
You told Jamie a few minutes ago, when you wrote Bound Feet, you didn't know how to build a character that the reader has to care for. But since then, you have written more horror, and maybe you are now into it more consciously. So maybe you could add something to that question.
Yes, I have actually spent the last few... Okay, so let me back up and say, when I tackle a new book, not always so with a short story, because again, short stories, I kind of write them however I feel and just more for fun. But when I tackle a new book, I always have to have something in mind that I'm challenging myself with, something new that I'm experimenting with. Like maybe, you know, if I've only done single point of view, I might try to add a second point of view, or try to work on something that is a skill I would like to improve or develop. And one of the things I've been doing for like this last book especially, but in general in the last few years, is really trying to focus on character and strengthening, you know, making those characters feel so real and feel like they had a whole life before the story began, doing a lot more work in developing their backstory and, you know, and same with like the side characters. I think it's so important to have, you know, characters that you care about. You don't have to necessarily like them. It depends on the story, but something where you're interested in what happens to them for some reason, right? Like maybe they are likable, maybe they're relatable, you know, maybe they have experienced a pain that you also have experienced at some point, something like that. And I think that's really, really important in staying interested in the book throughout. And so that's something I've just been trying to improve for myself and will continue to try to work on.
But it worked already in your short stories, like in Memories We Drone. I like that story because everybody had some favorite food and you get to know yes. the people. Of course, you know a lot about the narrator, because this is all not only about food, but also about her lost relationship. But also the others, you know, not so well as the narrator, but still, I get to know them through their favorite food. And they always have memories with that food. And of course, I think the reader asks themselves, what's my favorite food? What would that right. plant taste for me? And all of a sudden, you're into the story and you can't help yourself. You just have to live through the things that happen in that story, which is not too bad, but still not really a utopia.
Yes. Yeah, I find that I never set out to write about food. Like, I didn't intentionally say, okay, I'm going to write food into a bunch of my stories. And yet I've realized that so many of my stories, and every single book of mine has food. And it was actually other, you know, friends that pointed that out, that they loved that about my stories. And I didn't even realize that. But, you know, clearly it's a very important thing to me. I think that food is associated with so many memories and so many emotions. You know, it's a huge part of how I think about my own family. And a fun little fact, when In Memories We Drown came out, my mom, who is, you know, like one of my biggest supporters of my writing, she actually baked a 5-spice apple pie and had everybody over. And, you know, we shared it to celebrate the story. So, you know, there's just so many memories I cherish that are associated with food. I even wrote an essay recently for Crime Reads that hopefully will come out soon. That's about like writing food into my stories. So it's clearly become something that I have just embraced and accepted at this point. I also have like my very first nonfiction piece was also about food. It's called Huokuo, which is hot pot in Mandarin. And Sarah Gailey published it for their website that is, you know, food memories, basically. But yeah, anyway, all of that aside, coming back to In Memories We Drown, something that was really fun about the research process for that, there was a ton of research for that story, you know, many of my ocean books and research, but also the fun part was I asked friends and family for their favorite foods and wrote those into the story. So a lot of those are just from people that I know. And, you know, it was just kind of a fun way to bring in something that is very like real and special to some people in my life. And yeah, that story actually took a very, very long time. That might be the story that took me the longest, because it was just hard to get it just right and to get just the right feelings I wanted. And so I just kept writing it and rewriting it. But yeah, I'm glad that you liked it.
Yeah, thank you. I hope it will be translated, but it looks very good at the moment.
I hope so too.
Yeah, that's cool. Maybe the story with the stroller, with the narrator who has a miscarriage, but she has already made friends and was knitting baby stuff. That was a great horror story. And it wasn't even, it was a bit hopeful in the end. And I think Jenny has read it too, and she had another interpretation than I, which is fine, because short stories, you know, usually open wounds, and you can read it like this or like that. And I was very surprised about the how it was going on later, because there's a woman and she has a miscarriage, and then she hides it and she doesn't tell anybody, so everybody thinks she's still pregnant. And that was like the most spooky thing I could think about, because everybody will treat you still like a pregnant human being, and why, you've already lost your baby. And this is really, really spooky. And I was glad it didn't turn out to be so spooky in the end. Because in the middle, I was like really frightening. So, oh my God, what will happen now? So that worked for me, obviously.
Yeah, she was such an interesting character to write. I find that I am specifically very fascinated by, I guess people call them morally gray now, or kind of like, you know, characters that don't necessarily do things that you agree with, I suppose is one way to put it. I think that I just find it so interesting because I am very, very curious about motivation in general. And so, you know, when I see someone do something or hear someone do something that just seems so wild, you know, I love to like dig in and consider, like, how does somebody get there? You know, how do they get to the point where they've decided that this is a good idea? And that's how I approach that character, you know, and just thinking about like, okay, what happened to her that made her take this approach. And I also appreciate that you have different, you know, interpretations about or thoughts about the ending. That's something that I really enjoy, especially in horror and particularly with short stories, is having those endings that people can interpret differently or have different feelings about. I've heard also with Bound Feet, many people have told me like they have different reactions to it in terms of, you know, how they feel about the ending. This story too, I definitely left it up to interpretation, you know, what you think and what you think happens from there.
Is that a horror specific thing to have that ambivalent endings? I just also asked Yvonne in that, so the question goes on both of you.
I do think that I see it more commonly in horror. I think that you probably could do it elsewhere, but I think that in horror, sometimes the part that is horrific to some people is that uncertainty and that remaining uncertainty. And so I think that ambiguous endings do often find a home in horror.
And they work better there because I'm much more emotionally attached to the story. And if it's ambivalent, I take more the story with me afterwards than if it's solved and closed up, I guess.
Yeah, that's something I also very much enjoy. I love when, like, I don't like an ending that's so ambiguous that you don't even understand what happened. But I like an ending where you see that, like, there's still possibility for future horror, especially, or like for things to maybe go wrong, but also they could go right. And, you know, like you said, it just pushes you to continue to think about it. I really enjoy when books and stories like linger that way because it isn't quite closed and you kind of are like, as the reader, you're taken into the journey and you can sort of like decide for yourself or think about what might happen next.
I think the stories will haunt you more, Jamie, than the most classic horror movie ending is you have defeated the bad one and in the last minute you see him standing up again and then the movie's over. So that's like the Michael Myers move, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, and horror authors really like to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And I've only published two horror stories yet, because horror is much more difficult for me than science fiction, because I want to be scared myself. But how do I scare myself if I know that I have all the control? It's not so easy. So, okay, that already worked twice. So nice. I hope it will work.
Very cool.
Yeah.
You have to surprise yourself during the process to get frightened by your own writing.
Actually, I think science fiction is much more easy to write. It's interesting.
I think it's much clearer, the impression I got. It's not, well, you can also write it emotionally, but most of them don't. So, and it's more driven to solve something or to show something which is not near, which is new, where horror just tried to show something we already experience, but we don't want to experience. So I guess horror just tried to get us to overcome avoidance, where science fiction drives us into something. We say, okay, we want to experience something new, curiosity. Perhaps that's just what comes to my mind right now. So that could be one part to have these different approaches.
That's very funny because it's definitely the opposite for me. I find horror much easier to write than science fiction. And I think it's because science fiction takes so much research for me.
Weren't you the woman that had that much shark research done?
So much research. And that may be because, yeah, I didn't come from a background of being a scientist. And I think if I did, maybe it would not be quite as intimidating, but I feel I have to do a lot of research.
I don't feel like that. Most science fiction authors have too much info dump because you have to do world building in science fiction, but you don't really have to do world building in a short story. You can leave that all out.
Yes.
Have it only in your head. And then just wipe the action because you don't have so much space. And maybe that's why I think in Germany, the horror short stories are better because side switching is often too much world building, too much info dump. I think you have the word too. Maybe it's even an English word and we have borrowed it. So, and that's often a problem and they don't really care about the characters. Mm. And I think with horror,
they must.
Yeah, I think even the German authors have already heard about it, that you have to have good characters in your horror story because otherwise nobody will care.
Yeah, that's all you have. The characters and emotions, you know? You have to really lean on it.
Could you write a horror story without a character or being distant to the character? Would it work? Would there be a way to make it work?
I mean, I think it probably depends on your goals, maybe, because possibly if you're trying to do something more like highlight an issue, there may be a way, but I still think that it would benefit from caring about the characters regardless of what it is, you know? Like, even if there's a way to do it, I think it just never hurts to care about the characters more.
I really need that. I think I'm stopped reading when I don't care for the characters. I have to be so curious then about something. My brain has to be curious, and it's really difficult to make my brain curious because I've already read so many science fiction and horror short stories.
Or was that
usually easier to get me with good characters? I would recommend that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you're already here, so you know you've succeeded. And I think you've mentioned in some interview that you do that on purpose, writing from a female perspective and also sometimes from an Asian perspective. And I feel that you do that more with your horror stories, like this kind of perspective, because Scarcity of Sharks and In Memories Redrawn, I've read more like for a general audience and not especially for women. You agree?
I do think that horror tends to be a lot of times where I explore issues of identity particularly. And so I think that when I write all my stories, in my mind, the main characters are always like Chinese girls or women. but I think that it's not really on the page as much as like something that the character is thinking about in outside of my horror and maybe thrillers. But with the horror, a lot of times, you know, they're focused on those emotions they're going through, that catharsis and, you know, or just dealing with the grief and trauma, like I said. And so often I think that is where those feelings of being uncertain about, you know, your place in the world or what it means, for example, to be Chinese American, you know, in my novella that's coming out next year, Demon Song, the main character is a Chinese American girl it's a woman who's looking back on her experiences as a teenager. So when in the past part, she's a Chinese American teenager who is living in Beijing, China, and she is dealing with those feelings of like, you know, am I Chinese enough? And that kind of emotion of, you know, what does it mean to be Chinese American when I'm actually in China? Whereas, you know, this is a very different thing from being Chinese American in the US. And so I think a lot of times it just comes out because they're diving so deep into the emotional side of what they're dealing with. And, so I don't know that I really did that on purpose, but I think that's what ends up happening because of how I conceptualize those stories differently.
And I think from the horror stories I've read from you, the narrator had to have a female body because of the experiences. And with the two science fiction stories I have read, it's thinkable that any other gender is thinkable because it's just another topic.
Mm-hmm.
Not especially, everybody can be heartbroken. Everybody could care for sharks. It's not something that only
it's only women that can care for sharks. Sorry.
Even Spielberg cares for sharks now, or was it?
No, so he's a woman.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's a good point.
Yeah, maybe. I was thinking about it because in preparation of this podcast, I've read a couple of more short stories and also recent ones. And then we both read Creature like yesterday and afterwards talked about what do you think the creature stands for?
So you're not allowed to spoil it right now.
No, we won't spoil it. But it wasn't when I put that question to Jamie, I was sort of afraid that she would tell me, don't do German lesson in school with me. Because that would be a typical question, like, what does Moby Dick stands for or something like this? No, it wasn't like that.
You also wrote this, is it a kind of essay with the missing mothers?
Yeah.
The H word, yes. And I really loved it because it just put my perspective on it, and it was so totally clear. And I thought, okay, this is again something where women won't be seen or get invisible. And you just wrote it there so clearly that in so many tales or stories, the mother is missing, and that's why the daughter or the children has problems. So the issue isn't the environment, it's just because the mother isn't there to save them. So that's the premise of the essay. You should also read it. It's really good.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just, how did you came to that premise, and what does it open it for you to have that, to put that light on that unconscious invisibility in society?
Yeah, it's something I've been working on since you mentioned Creature. I'll start there just because Creature was actually the first short story I wrote. It, even though it was published more recently, it's just the magazine held it for a while before publishing it because of their schedule. So yeah, Creature was the first story I wrote, and it's about a woman who had a miscarriage and is dealing with the aftermath of that. And I think, that really opened the gates for me writing vulnerable things. And then, I wrote Bound Feet shortly after that. And, so I've kind of been moving over time toward putting these kind of subjects into my stories, my essays. In a way, an essay can be harder to do so in because it is directly about me and my experiences. And, for listeners, that essay, All the Missing Mothers, was about maternal mortality, and I almost died in childbirth. And so, and I wrote about those experiences related to the fairy tales where the mothers are missing. And that's actually an essay that I've had in mind for a long time. My kid, who, the one who I gave birth to that almost killed me, is 2.5 now. And so I was thinking about this essay, after she was born. And I've had it mulling over in my mind, but I don't think I was ready to put it on the page for a while. It just took a very long time before I felt ready to kind of open up in that way, in such a personal way. And yeah, so I guess it's just sort of lived there for over a year. It's actually almost 2 years before I did anything about it. I ended up pitching it to the editor of Nightmare Magazine, before I'd even written it, just as a premise. And in a way, it's kind of nice that with nonfiction, you can often pitch an idea before you write the story, because I'm not sure if I ever would have actually written it without a deadline, but then once I was accepted and had a deadline, I was like, okay, you got to write it now. Now you have to do it. I actually just wrote it at night. Night tends to be my best brain thinking time. And so for writing. And so I wrote it at night, which is usually when my mind is a little more relaxed and free and lets me just put words on the page without overthinking it as much like I do during the day. And so I wrote that essay and sent it in. But yeah, it is something I've had to push myself to do a little bit, and that I am specifically trying to write about because I know it is also a subject that is at least somewhat taboo here in the US. I feel people don't want to talk about miscarriage. They don't want to talk about, you know, maternal mortality. They don't want to talk about childbirth in general. Like, I feel like so many of these subjects are not explored considering how big they are in so many people's lives. Also, like, especially after Bound Feet came out, it's been out for, I guess we're approaching 2 years. I received many messages from people who had experienced miscarriages or even experienced child loss and just saying how meaningful it was to them and how they just appreciated so much being able to read a story where I just, you know, didn't hold back really in those emotions. And that really encouraged me to continue to push myself to open up about it and to write essays and stories and books that, you know, feature people like, usually, like I said, Chinese American women who are going through these experiences. So yeah, that's where that kind of came from.
Thank you for sharing that. And I think it's a very important and good way to make these people seen.
Yes.
They're self-seen, and they have also their space in fiction and in the society, and that these narratives and emotions and experience will be part of our discussions and how we want to live together.
Yeah, I've had many, many messages also with the stories and essays for that. So it really is encouraging and helps me continue to write it when it is a painful subject, but I feel like it's, I am sad that so many people have gone through it. And at the same time, given that how many of us have experienced it, it is nice to sort of, you know, have that connection and build that community and share feelings about those experiences.
Yeah, you make some very important topics just visible. And then when I read it, I know, okay, here is somebody who has gone through that also and takes the courage to talk about feelings. And this helps me, and this invites me to do the same. And I don't think we are better in Germany to talk about feelings. Maybe we are much worse. And I mostly write science fiction short stories. We have like 40% of the short stories are written by non-binary or female human beings, but still the prose from male ones are usually more, you know, reviewed and read and nominated and the prizes, with only very few exceptions. Mostly because I think the big magazines still have more male prose in them, and they are written more, I think, than the anthologies. Mm-hmm. And some of the readers can't really relate to the stuff I'm writing because it's very emotional. I think I do this on purpose. No, I know I do it on purpose. And it's encouraging that at least in like Clark's World and Uncanny, I read a lot of stuff, not necessarily only written by women, that is also very emotional. And I like that. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of stories I look for.
Same.
We need more of that.
Yes.
Just keep going.
Yeah, and I've actually also had messages from men who, you know, did not physically experience miscarriage, but emotionally did as well. Or some of them who have read it and then immediately sent it to their wives. And I feel like, you know, that just, it means a lot to me.
I think it's sometimes even more hard for men. For example, a friend of mine, a male friend of mine, he and his wife lost their child when 1 week before the child was due, and there were groups to help her, but there was nothing to help him. No man's right. group. It was totally taboo for him to go somewhere, to talk to somebody. He was totally alone. At least his wife had help, but he was just, there was nothing for him. Because men don't have to, talk about feelings, talk about loss, obviously. At least he didn't find any group, any help.
Yeah, that's really hard. And sadly, kind of unsurprising. I think that is common. Yeah.
But I think that also shows how important it is to have these stories so that we can have discussions on it, so that we can also on a political and societal level figure out, okay, who needs help in what?
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, that's the hope.
Or to be seen, and that's really important.
Yeah, I would love to have us kind of move toward that as a society, just being more open about some of these subjects that really shouldn't be taboo, that we should be able to discuss and deal with and help people find ways to deal with.
You've mentioned in your other interviews some favorite authors, but I would like to ask you if you have authors in mind, especially in, fantastic genres, who already inspired you with emotional prose in science fiction or horror, for example?
Oh, of course, when you say that, my mind just goes blank. Okay, so one that I'm thinking of is actually sort of a thriller author, like crime fiction thriller, so I hope you don't mind. But Tana French has like such emotional writing. Like, her stories are built around a mystery. Like I said, I enjoy that as well. But really, they're so deeply about character and emotion and diving into the backstory that I feel like, she kind of sits between genres too. I don't know that she's entirely thriller. She's sort of like literary crime fiction, almost a horror vibe and thriller some at certain times. So a little hard to pin down. But I do reread The Likeness, which is my favorite book of hers, for that emotion and for that character and for understanding how to like really dive deep. Oh, another, I just thought of another one. So Tananarive Due, she has been writing horror for a while now, but I feel like she got even more popular recently with The Reformatory, which is a very, very dark historical fiction and historical horror, I guess I would say. And it's so good. It's very, like, her books are so emotional and they really don't hold back in the horror aspects too, because she's writing about Black people experiencing, various traumas related to like the way Black people are treated in America. And I found, her writing is very, very like touching and deeply emotional.
Is there any last question, Jamie? Because we've hit the hour.
Fine. Thank you very much.
Do you want to tell us something about projects that are very much in front of the door now?
Yeah, so I mentioned it earlier, but Demon Song is my next adult horror novella. It's coming out with Titan Books next fall, so a little ways away, but I'm very excited for that one. It is a very loose Phantom of the Opera retelling set in a Chinese opera house, and it has, some Chinese mythology by way of Journey to the West, which is a Chinese classic. And that one, I'm excited for that one to come out. I just secretly got the cover for it and, excited to be able to reveal that. It looks awesome. otherwise, like I said, still kind of finalizing what's going to happen with some of my novels. But, hopefully I'll be able to announce those sometime once everything is squared away. And I have, let's see. Oh, I have an essay coming up with Apparition Lit magazine. And then I have another essay with Crime Reads. I have a short story coming out in the Darkest Night anthology, which comes out this fall and should be available in at least bookstores in the US. I'm not sure worldwide if, you know, they'll be available everywhere. And I'm like, what else do I have? There's, I guess I'll just say that you can always find all the most updated links on my website, www.kelseyau.com, KelseyU.com. And I do tend to keep that pretty accurate. So, you know, you'll find links to read stories online, read essays online, all my books, information about all of that there. And I typically do also share any big news on my social media, which is at A Novel Escape on Instagram and Twitter. Thanks for having me.
I follow you everywhere, mostly on Twitter.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for giving us the time and the knowledge. It was fun to have you. Thanks a lot. I will continue reading and following, and you will just continue writing.
Yes, thank you both so much. This was a lot of fun.
Okay, ciao.
Bye.
Bye.